Hey everyone, this is Chris Chico, and I have on this call I have a few people on the line with me. I have Steve Lamb, who is part of our internal acquisitions team in the South Florida area. Say hello, Steve.
Hello, everybody.
And I have David and Tom, who are clients on REI Vaults, and they're here together with us on all four of us. So say hello, David and Tom.
Hello, all. Hey, this is Tom.
So, you know what? What I wanted to do, the purpose of this call is us to, David and Tom want to have a better idea of kind of how we handle things in the South Florida market, how we operate internally with regards to, doing deals and wholesaling. And they want to get a better insight on what we're doing and see what maybe of what we're doing they can implement on their side or tweaks that they can make in order to make their business better. And what I wanted to do is maybe, David and Tom, without getting too much into the details, maybe we can give, because what I like to try to do is get from you, like, you know, what are the higher level things that you want to kind of make sure that we cover on the call. And then that way, as you're telling me those things, I'm going to write them down in an effort to try to maybe organize them in a workflow that might flow better with kind of the points that we'll cover. So I want to also make sure we cover everything that we want to cover for you guys. So, like, give me maybe a big picture overview of what are the things that you really want to kind of dig down deep and try to get from the call.
Sure. Number one is probably the setup that we need that would optimize our sales force. Then areas, the internalization of structuring for how many areas we're doing, then utilizing VAs, and I think I have one more, training, so, and training VAs specifically. So those are the high level.
Okay. Okay, let me just make a couple quick notes. Training the VAs. Okay, so I wrote these things down. So my thought is, why don't we talk about Steve? I think it's important to maybe get a good understanding, Steve, of what our structure was before. Like, how do we start off with Gil and Donna, and what do we learn from that structure, and how we change things to what we're doing now?
We're Gil and Donna, maybe.
Yeah, Gil. So we have Steve. Yeah, Steve, and then we have right now Donna, who's our VA. Virtual assistant. She's from the Philippines. We had previously had two VAs. One was whose name was Gil, and then we had Donna, and both of them together working with Steve. And we initially had that set up with Steve and the two VAs, and that was not working. So maybe Steve, why don't we share with them what were some of the challenges that we had with that setup and the way we were approaching the leads on that.
I think we let what we had set up was we had two VAs and myself, and I was kind of like, if you can imagine a phone room where you're selling college loan consolidation, and you got 40 people in a room, and one guy walking around called the closer. And that was the thought, you know, the basis of thought that I was the closer walking around behind a couple VAs, and whenever they had somebody on the hook, I would talk to them and get the deal, send the contract, and get it done. What happened was, after a few weeks and listening to the VA, one of them specifically was the guy making the calls, listening to his ability on the phone, I was flabbergasted because he just didn't sound good. It was like anybody in the country, in our country, calling your cable company or your whatever large corporation you want to call it, but you're actually calling India or the Philippines and talking to somebody who is just reading a script. And they're not listening to what you're saying. They're just regurgitating what's on the page. So his statements, what he was saying, sounded ridiculous from a sales standpoint to us, to me and Chris. So we figured that was on our way to go because we were losing business. We thought we would probably lose business, which we're sure we did, when somebody who's going to sell the most valuable thing in their life or their biggest investment they own to some guy who can't put a sentence together or listen to them on the phone, it's not going to happen.
Right.
So what we did was we got rid of one of the VAs and kept one. We actually, the other VA had a better phone voice and was more appealing, whether it's because she was a female or she just had better, more experience in speaking the language, or she actually listened. I don't know the exact reasoning, but we kept her. We also kept her because she stays on my behind. She is like my, like a good secretary would be basically managing your day. This is what the VA does for me. She goes through our leads and everything we have and tells me who I got to call. Because this might slip through the cracks, not intentionally, but, you know, if I got 300 follow people to follow up with, you can't get a hold of that many people in a day or an afternoon. You know, you're lucky to call 20 people if you have conversations with people. I just got off the phone, for example. I got off the phone 4 minutes ago. I got on the phone with the person at 11:40. And that's one lady, okay? Now, I'm excited because I think it's going to turn out to a deal, but because there's so much agita involved in her selling this property, I have to talk to her about every angle of the deal. Now, the VA definitely couldn't do that, okay? Only I could do that. And sometimes I don't have the answer, but I know how to give them a response that will satisfy them until I find out the correct answer.
Right.
Where a VA doesn't even have that ability. I'm losing my train of thought here.
But basically what you said is what I've been preaching here for like the last 2 or 3 months is the people, the two most important things about hiring a person or hiring a personal assistant or hiring a person that works for you is, number one, they work their tail off. They work hard, they're on time, they're prompt. And number two, they care about their job and they care about those leads and they care about, you know, making you happy and they care about everything. And, I mean, so all that translates into her pushing you because she cares about this. It's lead management. And that seems to be the big thing here.
Yeah, let's put it this way. We kept the girl because she's almost annoying to me.
Yes,
she sends me stuff. She Skypes me and emails me and texts me, "Steve, you better call this person. Steve, to the point where it's like your mom telling you what to do when you were 10. You just want to run out of the house screaming. But I know I need that badly. You know, guys, let's be honest here. I'm not a technical logistic guy. I'm a sales guy. I can talk to you about anything. I'll blow your socks off for hours about nothing. But when it comes to scheduling myself and following up, I need somebody pushing me to do that because that's not my forte. I mean, I admit that. And her caring is because she gets a little bonus, let's say, whenever a deal goes through.
I want to just make a couple comments about Donna. And I want to kind of come back to what happened with Gil. You know, with Donna, just so that you guys know, just a few details is that she also does some stuff for Steve, right? She'll write contracts for you. So if you want to send a contract to someone and you can email a contract to someone, you'll tell her, hey, get this contract written. Here's the price. She'll do everything, and then she'll say, hey, here it is. It's ready. And then you'll email it to the client, right?
Correct.
Right. And then also we pay her, just so that you guys know, she's here in the Philippines, so we pay her a monthly salary of $550 a month, $550 a month. And then we do bonus her for every deal that closes $50. So she has an opportunity to make, you know, some good money, especially over there in the Philippines.
Okay, so she's doing $550 a month, and you're giving her how much bonus per deal?
$50 a deal. So I want to come back to a couple things, though, from the previous comments we made about Gil. So one thing I want to just stress is call recordings. You know, we would have never figured this out had we not been recording the call. And so that's the key, you know, the way it's recorded with Skype Manager. The calls get automatically dropped into a Google Drive folder, which then uploads into the cloud, which we then have access to, and then we can go through all the calls. And so had it not been for call recording, we would have never known that. The other thing I wanted to touch on is, you know, a lot of times you look at a script, and they're mechanically going through the script, as Steve said. but they're missing a lot of nuances, you know, a lot of cues. It's a different thing, you know, if you tell me, hey, Chris, I'm going to make you an offer of $50,000, and I would say to you, sure, David, I'll take that offer from you. Yeah, okay. And you could tell in my tone of voice that it's kind of very sarcastic and very like, you know, it's not the same as somebody says, yes, Steve, you know what, that sounds like a great offer. I'll take that call. I definitely want to think about that. But the VAs weren't able to pick up on that. And then also the other thing is the importance of, you know, that initial call that you make to the seller. And that is that call where it's that first point of contact, where you're even just gathering information, just basic information about the property. That's a really important call because it's the first call, the first point of contact, it's a call that allows you to build rapport with the seller. And so the VAs were making those initial calls. And that was also an issue. They were making the calls, they were not coming across correctly. And then we started to have a lot of questions about credibility. And Steve and I had this discussion. You know, Steve and I would never have anybody ask us about who your company is. Are you with the BB, you know, Better Business Bureau? What's your website? I need to look you up. We would never get into those. But with the VA, with the VAs calling and being the upfront person calling them, we would get all those questions, and we couldn't figure out why until we figured out that, hey, you know, just they weren't really, you know, they weren't coming across in a way that makes the seller feel that, hey, I got somebody here that knows what they're doing and they can help me with my house. So those are the other issues that came up is the credibility issues with the VA. So just
essentially,
to be clear,
let me interrupt. Essentially, the VA sounded like an email was coming from a prince in Africa. I wanted you to open a bank account, and, you know, if you send me your social security number, that's what every seller was hearing
yes.
from these VAs, where when I have been doing this for 14 years plus, I've never had anybody ask me, who are you? Because I'm speaking to them in a, like they're used to being spoken to. I'm either mirroring them or I'm empathizing with them. I'm selling them. I'm being a salesman, you know, so they're not questioning me in the least. Which was a huge thing, by the way. It was huge.
Yeah, and then the other thing I was going to mention about that is just so that you guys are clear. So when, you know, the calls come in, they're processed by the virtual assistants, by the virtual assistant team, the same thing as you guys. We're using the same thing. They process the lead. And then now if the seller leaves all the information, all the detailed information, then obviously Steve looks at those and he'll call those. And then correct me if there's anything incorrect here, Steve, let me know. And then now, however, if somebody doesn't leave enough information and they just say, you know what, I don't feel comfortable leaving a message, call me and I'll give you the details. Steve still calls those as well because that's the first point of contact. Donna, will call the hangups, right? Because those, it's more of a numbers game. She will also, using our text messaging, she will text back and forth to say if Steve has 20 people he's trying to follow up on it and he just can't seem to get them, she might go through all those 20 leads and text message them and say, hey, you know, and I can send you, we're going to post actually in the members area a text message so that you guys can use that as a template. But she'll text message the sellers and in order to try to get a response. And if she gets a response, then she'll punt it over to Steve so that Steve can get on the phone with them. Was that pretty accurate, Steve, what I just said?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just a matter of I don't want to, you know, calling somebody who didn't leave any information or any message. If they didn't leave a message, I'm not calling them back because they were just, I'm going to call at 2 in the morning because they want to hear what it's about. They don't want to talk to anybody.
Right.
But I will call people. And also the messages are very important to listen to. As Chris was mentioning earlier, the people that leave a message, you can hear what they're talking about in the tone of their voice, and you guys understand that. It's the nuances and so on, that the VAs don't hear at all. And I'm talking about the people who originally took a call in India, for example, or the Philippines, wherever they are, they do not get. Like, if I can listen to a message and tell, without even talking to the person, that the guy is playing games, he's full of crap, he's asking retail. You know, he just wants to, he does this with 7 realtors a week, you know, and I might just put him on a letter campaign to follow up with him. I might not even call him because he's just being a game
just unreasonable. Yeah.
Yeah. You know.
And going back to one of the questions that you guys had was about the training of the VAs. And just to give you a point of reference, right? So with the VAs, and this is both with Downer or Gill, but let's say with Gill, which is the one who was the guy that we let go. And just to go back, you know, Donna is definitely more organized. She's very organized. She keeps track of things. She's very meticulous. And so I think that if you're going to have a role like this, you need somebody like that. Because it takes the pressure off of Steve and allows him to do what he does best. But just to give you an idea, you know, with Gil, we went through a process of going through several applications. We really thought we had somebody really, really good that we can work with. And there's nothing against him. He was a great worker. But with regards to speaking with sellers, I mean, he went through my objection handling course. He went through the Jordan Belfort sales training. The guy, the Wolf of Wall Street, which talks about a variety of different things, nuances, tonality, and everything else. And I think he went through it twice, and it still didn't make a difference. It still did not make a difference. And so I say that to you because there's a limitation there, meaning that for you guys, and not that you were thinking of this, but if you're thinking, I'm going to hire a VA, and I'm going to just put him through the most amazing training, and they're just going to be, you know, on the ball, and they're going to be able to make these calls. That is we're working with Robert Nichols on VAs, and we have three VAs from him. And we got three really good VAs that we think can call sellers, but he had to go through probably 20 or 30 people just to find that one that maybe, possibly, could talk to sellers. So, but we're still not sure yet. So
okay,
I'm
sorry to put in there, but you said that you're using Robert Nichols VAs, and you had to go through 20 of them to get three good ones?
Well, no. I mean, Gil did not come from Robert Nichols. He came through us sourcing him directly. But with Robert Nichols, he gave us three VAs. We have three VAs right now. We're just kind of unwrapping them on our side. But from what he told me, in order for him to get us those three, he had to go through a lot of VAs to find, because we told him, this is what we're looking for. We really want this, really want this. And so there was a tremendous amount of effort on his side in order to get that VA. So the reason I mention that is because there is a finite kind of a line in the sand, I think, in that, you know, the difference between what Steve can do and what a VA can do. You could bring them as close together, but there's still going to be that gap, right? So Donna, she's great on the phone. She's very articulate, and she sounds great. She sounds amazing. But there's still that gap between her and Steve being a true salesperson who can get on the phone with a seller, make it feel comfortable, and push that deal to where it needs to be so that we can pick it up and be able to make money from it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so what are Steve's skills then, because to me it sounds like he's been in this for 10, 15 years, so experience is a huge plus on him. He knows what he's talking about. He believes in what he's talking about. You don't have to worry about him believing in what he says or knowing what he's doing. So is that more of his skill set, or is he just a sales animal? You know, there's just a completely different, you know, skill set there, or is it a little bit of both, or...
I mean, I'll speak, and then I want you to make a comment, Steve. I mean, it's a combination of two things. I mean, Steve is really great building rapport. He's a great sales guy. In addition to that, he does have real estate experience. He used to be a real estate agent initially. That's how he started. And then him and I, Steve and I, actually we met working in the same place. When I became in my path and journey to become a real estate investor, I went to work for this company that actually Steve was working at the same company, and that's how him and I got to know each other. And so he learned the business as far as, you know, real estate, investing, wholesaling, et cetera. And so there's two sides of it. There's the sales aspect of it, and there's the knowledge of real estate. I mean, for me personally, and I'll stop after this last comment. I want you to chip in, Steve, but I mean, if there was only one talent, I mean, I would rather have someone who's good at sales, who can speak to people and build rapport, because we can teach the real estate. The real estate and knowing, you know, what goes into each deal, that's mechanical in nature. whereas it's hard to teach the nuances that Steve is able to accomplish over the phone. Any comments, Steve,
still
on that?
Closer. Really, Steve is still the closer. I mean, in the whole process.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm the closer, and I'm also, you know, I'm selling the deals too. So it could be daunting. The problem is that I'm not saying that you can't find a person. And by the way, I'm not being cocky. When it comes to my skill set, I'm also an overweight, divorced, can't keep a relationship. I got all those problems that every sales guy you ever met has. But I can talk to anybody and make them my friend. I can talk to anybody and get them to talk to me about anything I want them to. Whether that's just I'm a good listener or the way I sound on the phone, you guys are listening to me right now. Who knows why? You know, I don't know if it's something that's learned. And I don't know if it's something you can teach somebody from another country. You know, if I'm talking to somebody on the phone, I've traveled extensively through my life. I can if they talk about something, I can relate to them in some way in that phone call.
The number one skill set there is that you build rapport. And we have a great guy that in our office that he's really good at that. I think part of his knowledge is you still need a little bit to know what we do, but we've been using him to like start off with people, and this is where we're shifting ours. We're going to start with the VA and then kind of only get people to him, and I think it might be a good fit. So that's why I was asking, does that guy just need to be the, you know, sixth salesperson that can sell anybody anything, or is it really more about the rapport? It sounds like it's really more about the rapport. And then
I think it's about the rapport. I'm talking to people, and we're not talking about rich people. We're talking about people that have a house that was left to them that's worth 50 grand, and it's all they have, and they work on a line in a factory somewhere. So I need that guy to believe and trust me emphatically, and that's it. Because if he feels comfortable with me, by the way, you've heard my call, the previous call, I'm on his side. So it's me and him against the company. So I've got this guy who thinks I am his guy at this place. I'm trying to get him an extra 1,000. I'm going to do everything I can to get him an extra 1,000. And whether I'm saying that and not, you know, I also used to run a health club, so I know what it takes. Hey, if I can get my manager to sign right here, will you do it? And then I leave the room, and I never talk to anybody. I just go back in 5 minutes, and they sign it. I know what I'm doing. So it's a matter of making them feel like they're getting represented, you know? Because this investment, if they lose this $50,000 house, that's their retirement. That's everything to them. So they have to feel trust and rapport with the person dealing with. Have to.
Yeah. You know, the one comment I would make is that when somebody, it's interesting because, you know, there's a lot of competition out there, right? So, you know, we're all not the only guys out there talking to these sellers. And, you know, the best way, for me, the way I can describe it is that these sellers are talking with multiple people. And you almost have to think about it and imagine them getting off the phone. They talk to, say, Steve or somebody in your office. And they get off the phone and they turn around and say to the husband and wife and says, honey, I think we can get this sold. Like, they have to have that confidence in them. You know, I talk about a bunch of people, but man, this guy here, Steve, I think this is our guy because I feel that he's on board with us and I think we can work with him and I think he can get the job done, you know, in order to get this thing off of our hands. And I think that's the general feeling that they got to feel walking away from, like, you know, this is it. We got somebody good.
Right, absolutely. And this is kind of the struggle we're going through. Not really a struggle, but we've changed our whole company. I mean, we did 181 deals last year, and we're trying to do 360 this year. So we're trying to figure out, you know, who's the right people for the bus, who needs to get off the bus, and I've got to get the right people in the right seats on the bus. So we've done a ton of changing already, and we're super excited about where we're headed. But for FSBO, I don't feel like we figured that out, and I think that this call's helped us figure what type of person needs to be in that role. You need to have almost an annoying VA that cares so much about getting deals done that she's almost a pain in the rear end and she can, you know, really push you. And then I think we figured out the structure. That was part of our other questions. Was there something else, Kate?
I got a ton of questions.
Okay. We were originally doing, we had two inside guys doing like four states and four areas, and it was like we were treating the leads like a dime a dozen, not gold, because we just had way too much volume and not enough quality. What, for your area, are you doing like one specific area, or are you doing a lot of different areas and we just need to make sure that we have the sales animals on the phone?
Yeah, I mean, we have three counties that we market. Yeah, you have four states. And so tell me, so what's the, tell me again, what's the challenge, what's the biggest challenge that you had?
Was the volume. Like, we had a bunch of call volume. We had enough of the call volume. It just was, the deals were, like we were saying, the lead management was horrible because we didn't have the infrastructure to be able to follow up like we needed to. We didn't have anyone hounding those guys to be making those calls or whatnot. And to be honest, it, there was just too many that, for those guys to handle. Then also we had a bottleneck with some of the outside guys because we would pass those leads over to our outside, like sales managers or whatever, and some managers would work harder than others. So we had some who were, you know, animals and got the deal sold and, you know, got and built that rapport with the sellers. And we had some outside sales managers who were just like, oh, I'll get to it when I get to it because I have better deals with HUD and MLS and auction, the other ones that we're doing. So it was like, you know, there was a bottleneck there, too. So we weren't treating every lead like gold. And then there was a bottleneck on the outside, too, for some of the states.
Yeah, but, Dave, I think that our problem was we had the wrong people in the position. So we didn't have the right person managing those leads. We didn't have the
anyone managing the leads at that time.
We did, but we just didn't. You know, she wasn't managing.
Yeah, I mean, my thought is it's a combination. I definitely would agree that, you know, I think from our previous conversations, you needed to have somebody that was there, accountable person. I think what happened is that, you know, from what our past conversations, you're giving these leads off, but, you know, they were kind of following along with them, but I think your outside people were used to getting leads a particular way that didn't maybe pay as much attention to these leads as you would have wanted to or with the same intensity that you would have preferred. And so a lot of that went through the cracks. And then I think that that in combination with, there were quite a bit of leads in the system. So I think that's a combination of those two things. You know, there are quite a bit of leads in the system, but in if you have that many leads, but then you don't have anybody there that's, hey, it's accountable and they're 100% bought into the working those leads and making something happen with them, then, you know, those two, you know, I think it's a combination of both of them. But if I had to pick one, I would definitely say an accountable person, because if you had an accountable person, they would come back to you and say, listen, here's the deal.
Yep.
I'm trying to get through as many as I can, but there's just too many. I need help. I need something. I need because there's no way I can get through all these leads. And they would come back to you and say, hey, here's what I need. I need your help. But you didn't have that because they just said, screw it. It's just too many leads, and we don't like the way these leads are anyway, so we're just not going to pay any attention to them.
Right.
Yeah, and you didn't have that squeaky wheel. Steve has Donna, and Donnie's a squeaky wheel, and she squeaks all day long. Well, guess what? That squeaky wheel is going to get the oil. So
yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
Well, yeah, every lead to Donna, it's like me. Every single one of those people have a $50 bill on their forehead. So she's gonna make me call. And by the way, she sends me stuff that I look at it and I go, like, Donna, you know, I she might even not see it, but I have the schedule to call them in 2 months because of what they told me on the phone last time. And she just wants me to call everybody every day. I'm looking at stuff going, I don't need to talk to these many people. And I always kind of pair through, and I'm working on her with that now to get her to stop. You know, we work on our how we tag the leads, for example. Now, what you guys are talking about, the urgency, you might need somebody, and I'm just, this is off the top of my head, to almost go through every lead to cherry pick the good ones. You know, if you work in four states, let's say you're getting, I don't know, 50 calls a day, you know, whatever the number is. There needs to be somebody listening to, and hopefully you're getting messages on all these leads or something in on the, you know, written form. I don't know how you're getting them, but I look for and listen for somebody died. I'm really sick. My kid's going to college. My mother's sick. You know, so these are all trigger things that
I'm calling. Or tenants issues, et cetera.
Yeah. I'm sick and dealing with the tenants. The call was on just before we got on the phone was the woman's had the house for 15 or 20 years, her husband died, and she had to hire a private investigator because she didn't know. Somebody's living in the house, but she doesn't have a lease with them. She has not seen the house in 5 years. So I told her, here's the deal. I'm going to send you a contract. You sell me the house. Don't even think we're going to run title. If there's anything other than you on the title, we'll fix it, and I'll take it with it, with the tenants. So I'm making her life easy. She came with me. She has a problem. I'm trying to make her life easy. All she wants to know is I sign this, and I get $45,000. That's what she wants to know. So if you have somebody going through every lead that comes in on a daily basis looking for these urgency factors as opposed to the guy who calls, well, I think it's worth about $170, but I'll do it for $160. That guy's a retail guy. Send him a letter again. He's not even worth a phone call as far as I'm concerned because there's no urgency there at all. You know?
Yeah.
He has no need at all.
Going back to your original comment, I think it was you, Tom, that said, I mean, it's just having that, it's a combination of having that person completely bought in that you have, that's a salesperson that is accountable and they're 100% committed. You know, there's no turning back for them. And then also helping them along with that squeaky wheel that's going to make sure that it's kind of like a safety net to make sure that things are going in the right direction and then that things get done.
Right.
Also, it's got to be worth their while. I don't know what you guys, your pay scale, but when me and Chris worked at that company back in the day, the biggest reason for me to get out of there was I had done, let's say I did 40 deals, you know, whatever, and I was getting paid like a realtor at 3%. Now, we're not talking about $400,000 homes. We're talking about $30,000 to $50,000 homes. And 3% just didn't cut it, you know, when the company was making 20 grand on the deal. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I was going to say the compensation, you know, one of the things I found, especially with CG, is that the compensation model is all over the place, you know, as far as what people pay and what they don't pay, et cetera. And that's always a fluid. I think it's, with regards to compensation, I think the main thing, overarching theme is that a good friend of mine says, you know, you get what you pay for. And so, obviously, somebody coming off the street that doesn't know anything about real estate, starting from scratch, but you think they have potential, that's a different person than maybe somebody who's come in, has real estate experience, that has some investing experience, doesn't want to do it on their own, wants to plug in somewhere, you know that, hey, we can get this guy up to speed rather quickly and get some results fast, then that might you know, entail a different number or a different set of numbers or the compensation package, right? So, as far as compensation, I think it just depends on the individual and thinking also how much you have to train him and get him up to speed, et cetera.
Right.
You said you had some other, but you, in your comments, David, you said you also had some, we just covered this, but you had some, it sounded like you also had some other questions, though.
Yeah, about contracts. Does Steve send them the contract or whatnot? Because, like I said, we hand them over. You know, we kind of like take that lead and hand it over right now to a sales manager that's outside, and then he gets the people on paper. But I don't know. I might want to keep that more in-house with the inside salespeople, since, you know, and just try and get them the contract that way. Because we do mail them out, and we've gotten several contracts back to us this week, you know, because they're using this new system or whatnot that we finally got them to use it. So they've been sending back the contract. But, you know, I just wondered if it makes more sense to keep it more inside sales than outside and just let the outside guys sell the property.
Well, you talk about, like, if a seller says, yes, I'll take the deal. If I'm talking to the seller and the seller says, yes, I'll take the deal, then the way you're doing it is now that goes to someone else who then meets with the seller. Is that correct?
Right, and they try and get them on paper right then. You know, they go and inspect the property and get the people on paper.
See, I don't know. You tell me, Steve, but I don't like that because all of a sudden Steve has built this rapport with this person, and then now I'm the one that shows up.
Hands off. Yeah, no. I never go to the house. It's rare. Unless I think it's a really good deal or I'm afraid I might lose, or it's close. I'm not schlepping an hour for something that might work out. So what I do is I tell them I either get their email address, fax number, or their address, and tell them that they're going to be getting a contract depending on the method they give me. If it's an email, I send Donna an email. You're going to get a contract in your email from Dana, and they're waiting for that. And Dana just, you know, has a template. She puts it together. I give her the price, and she emails it out, and she carbon copies me. If I don't hear from the person the next day, then I put a tickler in there for me to call them and follow up. Hey, when are you sending that back? Or have you sent it back yet? But I keep it me doing it. Because once I get the contract, then we have a deal. Until I have the contract, you don't have anything.
Right.
Yeah. I don't like the handoff. I would err on the side of, I would say doing it without the handoff, because that's going to get, if there's a choice, handoff or no handoff, I know you can get better results without handing it off. You know,
right.
Because it's just that
our guys are worried. Those sales managers are worried though, because I brought that up, and they're like, well, we're the ones that have to sell it, so we should have the final say on whether we keep this property or not, you know, because, and that might just be something we need to train our people on the inside to get more, you know, how the property is really, what the property is really looking like. Because in Indiana, we have the same, we have like $5,000 houses, you know, in some areas, and we have $20,000 to, you know, $100,000 in some areas, you know, so we've got some real crazy areas that are just like rental areas, you know, just like every part of the country, but I think the outside guys were more worried that they're going to get this crappy house that they have to try and sell, you know, or whatnot.
Who cares? I don't mean to sound flippant, but when me and Chris were working for this company, the reason I went to that company is because I walked in. By the way, I had to fight to get that job. It was a sales job at a company that I was just excited to work at when I realized that they had 50 deals for me to sell a month. As you know, my listings, okay? I didn't care where they were or what they looked like, because in my business, I prefer a piece of, excuse my language, I'm pretty gruff. I prefer garbage houses. I want a piece of crap. When somebody asks me what I do, I say I'm a wholesaler. They go, what is that? I go, I buy buckets of shit and sell them to investors. Excuse my French, guys, and I don't know if you're, that's how I speak. But that's what I do. I want it to be a beater. If it's a beater, it's my favorite house. And if a guy, you're giving a guy an opportunity to go get a contract, I don't care if it's a shoebox in the middle of the street. You're giving him, here's a contract, go get a house. That's crazy to me. So, and my theory is, once I have the contract, it's mine. Then I can hand it off to somebody to do something with, if I want to. Okay? And that's when I put it out to other guys that I know that sell, that have customers, that have buyers, and I'll give it to them and let them do it. But once I get the contract, it's my house. I'm not giving that to anybody else.
Yeah, so just to clarify, so the way we used to do it over there is the handoff was once the contract was signed, then at that point then there was somebody that was whose role was to sell the property, to work with the buyer and get that property sold. And so that was the division. So for me, I would test changing what you're doing, and because I think that if Steve talks to a seller and he builds that rapport and he finally gets the seller to approve the deal, but then now I show up, they don't know me, and they might have questions. I may not have the same level of rapport or the ability to build a certain rapport as the seller as Steve has built. And so now there's a chance that something could go wrong. So I don't like that. That would be my opinion.
Sure. Do you have a higher rate that you don't close the deals then? You know, like if you get a bunch of these on paper but they are, and the sales guys can't sell them or whatnot, I don't know your exact setup, but just by sending them the contract and never seeing the house, do you have a higher turnover rate or a higher fallout or dropout rate?
No, if it's a good it's a good house, we go look at it. I mean, I'll go look at it after. I went out this past Saturday, took a ride, you know, a 40-minute ride, because I thought it was a good deal. And I didn't even have the contract on that one, for example. If it's a good piece, I'll go out myself and look at it. If I think there's something there, if it's, you know, if I know the area and it's on the fence, and if they ask me, don't you want to see it first? I go, no, it's a house. You know, you say it's got issues, I believe you, and I'm willing to do it at this price. But as soon as I get the contract back, I either send somebody to look at it or I go look at it myself. But I want the contract in my hand first.
Well, let me ask
you. I'm wasting my
time. So, out of all that, when you say, let's say if you thought right now, you know, and just in general, if you contract 10 properties, How many of those properties do you sell? Like versus properties that you have to walk away from?
About half.
About half. Okay. So about 50%. So, you know, I'll give you the way we think. You know, first of all, if we talk to a seller and we're trying to negotiate on a deal, the decision that we're making is not whether or not that's a deal. It's not whether or not we think we can sell it. It's none of that. The decision point is this a deal that we are going to take a chance on? It's a little bit of a different perspective. All we want to do, we want to take the deal off the table. We want to take it off the market. So we think, you know what, we're not really sure. It depends on the condition. It depends on how the layout of that bathroom is or the bedroom is. None of it matters. If we think that there's a chance that we could do something with this deal, we'll put it on the contract. Now it's off the market. That means if somebody else calls them, they'll say, I already sold it. Sold to somebody else. Now at that point, we have options. We can look at it. We can say, you know what, on that deal, we really need to get inside. We really need to do a full inspection because the seller told us some things that were funky. But that's fine. We could do that. But we've taken the deal off the market. It's now ours to do whatever we want to do something with.
Right.
And so that's the approach. So maybe, I don't know if that helps, but it's a different way of looking at the process. It's not about do we want to buy the deal. It's just do we want to take a chance on it. And if so, let's put on the contract and then we'll figure it out. We might have to get a price for this. We might have to back out of the deal. It doesn't matter. On our side, the belief is that if we tie up five deals and we sell all five deals, then that means that we weren't aggressive enough in putting things on the contract. Because we should have tied up 10, sold five, and maybe sold two extra because there were maybes and we had no idea that they would sell for that much money. So we're
right.
always overly aggressive with us putting stuff on the contract and taking a chance on something to see if we might be able to make some money from it.
And, you know, guys, just I don't know what contract you're using, and I don't know if it's a secret of ours, but we have a 10-day inspection period on our contracts. And
yeah,
they use the same
agreement, Steve, as we do.
Okay, so I have no problem
have
calling somebody.
Yeah, agreement, yeah.
The way I set it up is, you know, I call them on day 7 or even day 10 or maybe day 11, business days, by the way, and say, you know what, I'm sorry. I did everything I could. I can't get my guys to approve it at this price. Would you, because unless you're willing to come down about 7, or, you know, depending on the price, depending on what I'm looking for. If you're not willing to come down a little bit, I have to walk away. But, you know, you're probably not going to sell to anybody else because I know everybody. And everybody has heard about, you know, whatever the case is. But you can always walk away. And sometimes
yeah.
when you walk away, it's called the old takeaway. My life is a takeaway. I'm sorry, I can't do it. And they chase you because they want to sell you the house.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I think we need to change it to where our guys just get more on paper up front, you know, and then, like you said, we can always let it go if it's really, you know, something that they can't sell, or we can bump them, because we've got our area here in Northwest Indiana, that's where we've been most successful because that's our backyard, but the guy there has a master at bumping the people. You know, we'll get them on paper, and then he'll bump them down. You know, if we can't sell it, we just did it yesterday. Where the guy we bumped him $15,000 and made a $10,000 profit, you know, because we got it too high originally, but the guy wanted to sell after a month, and we were like, okay, we have a, you know, our funding partner will do it for this, and we did the deal, and it's done now. So
okay, you walked away, and the guy came back, right?
Right, exactly. So
yeah, that's a huge takeaway. Sorry, have a nice day, and guess what? Nobody else is calling him, so they called you in a month. And they came
right.
And the other side is that, you know, most people are willing to, if they're on the contract with us, and if it's a reasonable reduction, you know, it's sometimes, you know, we just can't do it. But, you know, they don't want to go back out into the market, talk to 3 or 4 people. And for them, they're like, man, I'm here. They feel like I'm almost there. I just want to get this thing done and over with. Let me just take care of it, and that would be done with it. You know, and so I think that plays also in your favor in that particular situation as well.
Right.
I had one deal, guys. Let's put it this way. I had a deal, and it's not a big number. Let's say I bought it for 45. And I told the lady, listen, I'm going to do everything I can because, you know, I only make money if I can move this property. So let me talk to my people. And she told me on the phone, because I was on her team, that she could go as low as 41. I wrote it up at 45. And when it came down to it, I just made it 41. Because she told me originally that she could do that. So I let her the whole time. I'm like, hey, it's no problem. You know, oh, guess what? I need to do it in the 41. And we dropped it down. But it was the setup left it there. I mean, that was one example. But, you know, it's a lot in the setup.
We started setting every single person up about 4 months ago. Every single deal that goes under contract, even if we're putting it under contract at 25 or 28 or 50 or whatever, we're setting it up and saying, hey, if I can't get this, you know, I might need to get it for this much. It's almost just we're just planting the seed up front. We do that for every single deal.
Yeah.
Right. Good. Good.
Yeah, we got that. I think, like I said, I think we were just trying to figure out new setup.
VA.
I still think that
we just got one from Robert Nickel, and I've been training with him personally, and he's awesome. But I mean, I see what you're meaning, though. I mean, I would have to hear him on calls or put him on hangups or something and just see how he does.
And not only that, you have to wait and see if he's going to be the squeaky wheel or not.
Right.
Like,
exactly.
Really pushing things through.
Right.
You know, the benefit is once you get the right people on the bus, then everything else just, you know, works itself out, right? So it becomes a self-adjusting organism, right, that just fixes itself. But, you know, I think getting the right people on board is the key first step, you know, and if you have that, then you got a good foundation. I mean, as far as I want to make sure we get all the questions answered, but I mean, as far as any additional things that maybe we didn't cover on the call that you guys wanted to cover on the call?
No, right now we're kind of in the big picture mode, so this is what I think we need to work on, and then if we get into more nuts and bolts down the road, we can have more specifics. But, I mean, the guys know what they're doing to a certain degree. We just got to get the whole picture, we need to get the setup in place properly, and we're working on it, and I think it's looking good.
We basically just want to model what you guys are doing, you know, and just take it from there.